This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
New inflation numbers are in.
And prices aren't going much of anywhere.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hi, I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's the midday update from Marketplace.org. Happy Friday. It's September 17th.
Coming up today, a big vote on the United Continental merger and why the FDA might approve the first genetically modified animal. But first, U.S. consumer prices rose a little in August, but all the gains came in energy and food. Those categories are inherently volatile. They are not the main gauge of inflation. Let's bring in our Friday regular, Chief Economist Chris Lowe at FTN Financial, joining us from Connecticut. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
As I said, the prices that economists watch when they're assessing inflation were flat in August. Again, should I be worried that prices aren't going up?
Well, yeah, that's right. Look, there was a little bit of inflation, but it was energy, and it's reversed in September already.
Mm-hmm.
While consumers are likely to be relieved that prices aren't rising, it's symptomatic of a lack of growth in income. And that, of course, comes from the fact that the unemployment rate is stuck between 9.5 and 10.
Right. Well, so if inflation is so non-existent, Chris, how come gold keeps hitting record highs, $1,280 an ounce now?
That's right. The rise in gold to a record is telling us not so much that investors are worried about inflation, because there's 100 measures in the markets telling us they're not. What it is an indication that people are worried about turmoil in financial markets, which continues, and even the risk of sovereign default, the cost of insuring government debt, has increased in the last couple of months, suggesting that yeah, we're even worried about that.
Okay, so we just have a few seconds left, Chris, but overall, a flat inflation, is it just a symptom, or is it a bit of a worrisome development in itself?
Well, it's symptomatic of, as I said, the lack of pricing power of businesses and the lack of income of consumers. It is not yet full-blown deflation,
right,
which is a good thing, because that would indicate real economic problems. But it does indicate that that risk is still out there.
Chief Economist Chris Lowe at FTN Financial, thank you.
You're welcome.
Shareholders at Continental Airlines in Houston and at United Airlines in Chicago have agreed to allow the companies to merge and create the world's biggest airline. So what does it mean for the airline industry and, most importantly, passengers? Chicago Public Radio's Tony Arnold reports.
Mergers have become the name of the game in the wild blue yonder. First, there was U.S. Airways America West, then Delta Northwest, now the mother of all mergers, United and Continental. Joe Schwederman is an aviation expert at DePaul University. He says all the consolidation is a sign. There isn't much natural growth left in the airline industry.
We're in kind of a new era now where the growth is not being driven by announcements and new services. It's by combining.
But Schwederman says all that combining means fewer players and less competition, and passengers should expect to be digging deeper into their pockets.
No question there's going to be some upward price pressure, especially for business travelers.
Assuming both United and Continental get shareholder approval for the merger, there will still be some odds and ends to work out with the FAA and the Department of Transportation. Schwederman says that could take up to a year. In Chicago, I'm Tony Arnold for Marketplace.
Today, the Securities and Exchange Commission tackles a loophole in bank regulations, one that came to light during the financial crisis. The loophole allows a practice known as window dressing, and Marketplace's John Dimsdale explains.
Sifting through the Lehman Brothers collapse, SEC investigators found the bank's accountants were hiding its debts. Just before a quarterly finance report was due, Lehman would pay down a lot of its debt, report that snapshot to the SEC, and then reborrow the money.
I was not aware that this practice was going on.
David Reuter was chairman of the SEC in the late 1980s.
In fact, I was somewhat surprised when I learned that Lehman Brothers had been involved in that practice.
But it wasn't just Lehman. Columbia Law School's John Coffey says other big banks were doing the same thing.
This is a game of cosmetically changing your numbers in order that you have a healthier-looking ratio as of the last day of the quarter, even though that particular state of affairs will last only a matter of hours.
The result, banks looked more solvent and safer than they really were. The SEC is considering requiring banks to report an average of their borrowings throughout the quarter. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
In a couple of hours, President Obama will make it official. Elizabeth Warren, the Harvard Law professor, will oversee the creation of the Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection, granted in the financial reform law. Now, there are still questions about how much power Warren will have. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is with us live from our Washington studio. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
Why the confusion over how much power she'll have?
Well, the confusion is caused because President Obama is not going to formally appoint Warren as director of the new bureau. That would require approval from the Senate. And at this point, there just aren't enough votes in the Senate to confirm her. Now, a lot of Republicans are leery of Warren because she's a very outspoken critic of Wall Street. So the president is expected to make Warren an assistant to him and to Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner.
So how much power then, Nancy, will Warren actually have? What will she be able to do?
Well, lawyers here in Washington, and there are plenty of them, are busy trying to figure that out. And Warren, by the way, was a law professor at Harvard. All of the lawyers are poring over a section of the law that says the Treasury Department will run the bureau while the nomination of a director is pending. And it says, quote, the director may prescribe rules and issue orders and guidance. So it's not clear whether Warren will have the authority to write the rules needed to implement the new law. I talked about this with Ed Mirzwinski. He's a consumer advocate at the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. And he says all of the debate over Warren's powers is irrelevant because she's so close to the president.
She has the power of President Obama sitting right next to her. And that is power that we cannot measure. When Professor Warren wants something done, she'll ask the president. Very few people can go directly to the president.
Now, Steve, President Obama is expected to formally announce his appointment of Elizabeth Warren in about an hour and a half, not 2 hours, at 1:30 Eastern time today.
There you go. All right. And Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer in Washington. Thanks.
You're welcome.
The healthcare giant Johnson & Johnson says it's looking to buy the Dutch vaccine maker Crucell. Crucell got a U.S. government grant last year to develop a universal treatment for the flu, including strains that are resistant to Tamiflu. Johnson & Johnson is already into biotech, along with, of course, baby shampoo and contact lenses, contraceptives, but J&J is new to the vaccine market.
Listening to the Midday Update for Friday, September 17th. I'm Steve Chiatakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers at our website, marketplace.org. Now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us here in the United States. If you're an expectant mother in this country, the Family and Medical Leave Act gives 12 weeks of unpaid leave. But in Europe, pregnant women get 14 weeks and part of their salary. Now there are plans to give them even more, and it's got European business hot under the collar. The BBC's Rebecca Singer reports.
The European Parliament wants to give new mothers 20 weeks off work after giving birth and on full pay. But new research shows it'll cost European countries an extra $160 billion over the next 20 years to make it work. Business organisations claim the new proposal goes too far and is unaffordable. Kieran O'Keefe's from the British Chambers of Commerce and says it'll cost British businesses an extra $4 billion a year, a burden they could really do without.
In the current climate, when businesses are still struggling right across Europe and also in the UK, when public finances are under severe pressure, it just seems like terrible, terrible timing.
But supporters insist it should be passed, regardless of the current economic climate. Belinda Phipps is the chief executive of the National Childbirth Trust.
Those babies form the population of the future, so we shouldn't be letting a temporary financial crisis drive our policy on supporting new mothers.
More than 4 months on full pay may be a bit hard for European governments to swallow, but they are open to offering women more leave than they currently have. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
The Wall Street Journal today reports China could start playing hardball with foreign automakers. The paper says the government's thinking about plans to force those car makers to share cutting-edge electric vehicle technology if they want to keep manufacturing in China. But some auto industry experts say they don't believe it. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz has more.
The report quotes unnamed auto executives. They say China's government wants to force foreign automakers into joint ventures with Chinese companies if those foreign companies want to make electric vehicles in China. Industry insiders willing to talk on the record, though, don't buy it.
It would be foolhardy to implement a policy that has restrictions on foreign investment.
Bill Russo helped run Chrysler's operations in China and now heads Synergistics Limited, a consulting firm in Beijing. He says even though China has the world's top commercial market for electric vehicles, it's way behind the West in terms of technology. He says China knows this kind of policy would cause foreign automakers to pack up and manufacture their most innovative technology elsewhere.
The reality is this is a global industry. This is a technological frontier that requires collaboration between domestic and foreign companies.
Russo and other industry analysts say circulating a draft proposal is a typical way China's government gauges industry opinion. He says it oftentimes has little to do with what's enacted. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Fashion designers, models, clothing buyers, all descending on London today for the beginning of London's Fashion Week. Organizers say it's a big moneymaker, even in a down economy. Marketplace's Stephen Beard has more from London.
Mention the subject haute couture, and one doesn't think immediately of the Brits. Paris, Milan, and New York do seem to be in a higher league, but the UK fashion industry is not down at heel. Its high-profile designers have attracted a global following, names like Vivienne Westwood and Paul Smith. The whole business is doing well, says Harold Tillman, head of the British Fashion Council, and that's in spite of the economic downturn.
Clothes wear out, people get bored, they want new things. You've got spring, summer, and autumn, winter. It's not like something that's being produced that is the same as it was last year. So we have more of an opportunity of creating consumer interest.
The council has commissioned a report on the British fashion industry, which is published today. It concludes that it's the UK's 15th largest, worth more than $30 billion a year. But that figure involves a certain amount of window dressing. It includes the sale of all clothing, even imports designed and made abroad. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Friday, September 17th. I'm Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, you know to go to the numbers at marketplace.org. Consumer and environmental groups will be watching the Food and Drug Administration this weekend. The FDA will start meetings that could lead to the first ever approval of a genetically modified animal. From Oregon Public Broadcasting, Rob Manning reports on this experimental fish.
A company called Aqua Bounty wants to grow Atlantic salmon faster and bigger. They plan to do that by injecting genes into Atlantic salmon eggs from king salmon and a fish called an eel pout. Former Aqua Bounty consultant Val Giddings says the hybrid fish is cheaper to raise.
Cutting time to the market in half and reducing feed requirements by 10 to 20%, you know, those are significant gains that don't require further explanation.
But environmental groups worry the fish would wreak havoc with the West Coast's dwindling salmon populations. Giddings says the GMO salmon would be kept away from the wild population in closed pens. Fisheries economist Astrid Schultz with Oregon-based EcoTrust says fish have escaped from farms in the past. She says scientists commissioned by the FDA singled out GMO salmon as a species to be concerned about.
Their genes that are engineered to accelerate growth could compete more successfully for both food and mates than wild salmon.
More broadly, environmentalists say that going from engineering crops to modifying animals raises big ethical questions. At the very least, environmental and consumer groups want labels on GMO fish. But industry consultant Val Giddings says the fish doesn't need a label because it's safe to eat.
It's very easy to make an emotionally appealing argument. Consumers have a right to know. Consumers have a right to not be misled and have false fears raised.
Giddings and Schultz agree that the FDA will likely approve modified salmon, but officials say it's at least 18 months before they'll get to market. In Portland, I'm Rob Manning for Marketplace.
These days, you can buy almost anything on the web. Books, clothes, music, shoes. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports you can also buy art, like the really, really expensive stuff.
When it comes to art, Chip Tom is old-fashioned.
I like to see something. I want to see what the texture of the painting is, how the paint was actually applied.
But these days, he's feeling a little out of step. Tom is a partner and art curator at Heather James Fine Art. The gallery sells big names like Monet and Picasso.
Amazingly, we do between 30% and 40% of our business on the internet. We don't meet them. We don't even necessarily speak to them on the phone. It's all through emails.
People are spending upwards of tens of thousands of dollars on stuff that they've never actually seen or touched.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars per piece on things they've never seen or touched.
Tom says that confidence is a product of the internet age. Several websites now allow consumers to research works of art, much like investors research stocks. Brian McConville is with ArtNet.
We have a database that allows collectors or dealers to go in and find auction records that are illustrated that once upon a time was just not available to collectors.
He says ArtNet's 4 million auction records allow access to information that hadn't been widely available.
Before this database, it was just dealer to dealer, and collectors were really, really in the dark.
As the art world grows more accessible online, it's attracting new collectors.
Open the art market to all users.
Josette May is with the website Art Price, based in France. She says when people are educated through sites like hers, it helps the whole industry.
It is profitable for the galleries and the art dealers as well, because it will increase confidence from the buyers and naturally increase the market volume.
ArtNet's services include an online auction platform, so collectors can bypass more expensive brick-and-mortar auction houses. That is, assuming they don't need to see and touch the painting before they buy. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
And finally, the entire week's business news in a Marketplace Minute. Airlines are merging. Helter Skelter. Northwest got bought out by Delta. America West and US Air and TWA is no longer there. And just today it gets decided Continental is flying United. Soon there'll be just one airline around, and they'll charge you a fee if you want to sit down. Extend the tax cuts? Yes, but which? Everybody? Just the rich? Tea partiers say cut them all, but they might cut the GOP this fall. Healthcare opponents are showing endurance. You can't make me buy insurance. And honk if you're into Basel III. And I'll see you at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.